Welcome, magical souls, to episode 3 of Something Wicked, the podcast. Now, who are you to be listening to this podcast, you ask? Well, you could be a witch. You could be witch curious. Or maybe you're just a book nerd like me who loves to study and research. I'm Ravenclaw from the Harry Potter Sorting Hat, if anyone is curious. Either which way, we're open-minded here and we're looking for the magic. Oh my goodness, we're 3 episodes in and I feel like I'm at home already, but I also feel like I've been dying to talk about today's topic forever. Now, if you've never heard of kitchen witchery, it's pretty much exactly what it sounds like. It's witchcraft in the home kitchen, everyday cooking and food prep as a form of magic and also a spiritual practice. But before we go through the kitchen magic basics, the thing that's making me feel magical happens to be the perfect complement to this episode's topic. And that's because a few weeks leading up to our move to the new house, I deliberately went fossicking for a particular thing. I went fossicking for my very own kitchen witch. Now, a kitchen witch is also called a cottage witch, and it's a homemade poppet or a doll that resembles the stereotypical witch with the long nose and the big hat, or the hag, the crone, and you display it in your house, particularly in your kitchen, as a good luck charm and to ward off the bad spirits. It's also considered particularly good luck for both you and the recipient if you want to gift a kitchen witch for someone's housewarming. In my search, I finally settled on this beautiful creature from an Etsy shop. She arrived in the nick of time before the move, and I popped her in the same box as the first aid items and the routine kitchen items, so she'd be one of the first things to actually go into the kitchen and start beginning to make herself at home. The store I bought her from seems to specialize in poppets and kitchen witches if you're interested. I think she's got some hedge witches in there as well, maybe some hearth witches, some welcome witches for your front door. It's called Angel Knit Gift, knit as in the knitting needle or one word. And the store's based in Lithuania. I'm not sponsored, but I just loved the kitchen witch so much. And if you go on her Etsy store, you'll see why. It's just going through all these little individual sweet witches with these particular mischievous glints in their eyes and crazy hair. And the bonus is that they're made from decidedly witchy materials, like natural Lithuanian sheep wool and birch wood for the broom that they hold. So I took great joy and quite the long time looking at each of them. The one I settled on has this salt and pepper, crimpy black hair that's just wild. She's got a middle part. She's got a black glint in her black eyes. She's got a fabulous nose. And she's wearing this huge, puffy, pink and purple checkered skirt, and she's holding a broom and a magenta hat in the other hand with a big diamante flower on it. So I just love her. I just feel like she was speaking to me, and I was so happy when she flew to me through the post. And now I have her in our kitchen and she's settling herself in. Now my girls, when they first saw the kitchen witch, they were a little scared of her, and I can understand that. And they wouldn't go into the kitchen. Or at the very least, they would make me go in first if they had to go through and flip her around so she wasn't looking at them with her sparkling black eyes. But they're slowly getting used to her. The eldest one came up to me the other day and she said, "I went and said hello to Witchy this morning." And I was like, "Who's Witchy?" "Oh, the kitchen witch." And the younger one likes to plead with me sometimes to take her down so she can play with her in the dollhouse. And I constantly find now that either the broom or the magenta hat is missing, because it's being used for the girls with their Barbies. So it's nice that my kitchen witch is starting to be accepted by the household, but I think it's probably the other way around and we're starting to be accepted by our kitchen witch. So now she's there. She swings from one of the upper cupboard handles. She's quite close to the stove and I just feel like she's helping. And I swear to God, every time I make spaghetti bolognese in particular, I completely do it the same as what I used to, but I share a little cheeky glance with my kitchen witch while I'm cooking it, and I always get the girls or Ben saying that it tastes extra delicious. I feel like something is happening here. So thank you, kitchen witch. So kitchen witchery, which is close to both my heart and my stomach. Kitchen witchery is the thing that called to me the loudest before I realized that I was interested in learning and practicing witchcraft. And it came to me in the guise of both craving cooking certain savory items, like a hearty bolognese, a creamy bechamel-laden lasagna, soft garlic bread emitting a happy and fragrant golden ooze on squeezing, a pretty red puttanesca, also known as horse spaghetti. And on top of this craving, I was wanting to watch cooking shows with decidedly goddess-like hosts. Now, Martha Stewart, as pretty and logical as she seemed, she wasn't beckoning me with her baking. It was the women who slipped poetry between the slices of the food they were cooking and the ones that forgot for that little moment that we were watching while they ate it. They just seemed so caught up in the magic of the food they were making. And I'm talking the queen, Nigella Lawson, but I'm also talking lesser known ones. There's an Italian-Australian cook on one of our local channels, and there's also Sophie Dahl. She's the granddaughter of the children's book author Roald Dahl, and she did this tiny six-part mini-series, which you can probably now only get on DVD on eBay, but it's so perfectly twee and fairy-like, and I still dream of making her Arnold Bennett omelette. It just looks so creamy and delicious. And salty. I love salt. I think I've mentioned that. Kitchen witchery and related home magic, domestic magic, aspects of folk magic have definitely experienced a bit of a boom. They've obviously surged in popularity in the last couple of years due to everyone being at home more often. And I figure it's a bit of attempting to apply magic to the mundane, the routine, so that we don't go completely out of our minds if we're isolated or in lockdown. But the kitchen, its processes and its tools are magical in a myriad of ways. Cooking is the practice of magical transformation, and in doing so, it often incorporates all four elements: earth, food from the planet, born from the ground; fire, which comes from the source of the heat, which could be flame, solar power, or electric; water, which is the liquid used to prepare or cook the food; and finally, air, the steam rising from the food that you're cooking. Cooking and sharing meals can be acts of healing and nurturing. Kitchen witches may prepare special dishes for loved ones in need, like a very special chicken soup when someone's sick, or for very specific magical purposes, such as healing spells. Kitchen witchery celebrates the magic inherent in everyday life. It deepens that connection with nature, the elements, and the energies present in food and in cooking. It's spiritual, creative, practical, and even just touching the surface of it, I can understand that this type of magic, this type of witchcraft, can be deeply enriching for the practitioners. Sometimes kitchen witchcraft crosses into the area of the hearth witch, which incorporates more general house witchery, like cleansing and protecting the home. And kitchen witchery can also borrow aspects of the green witch or the herbalist, with the herbal and plant ingredients used, the spice rack being relied on. There are plenty of tips, like putting garlic under the sink or on a windowsill for protection, growing an aloe vera plant in a sunny window for scrapes and burns, drawing sigils or symbols on canisters, cupboards, appliances, cups and dishes. But where kitchen magic becomes really beautiful is within its larger metaphysical structure. The same way a real estate agent will advise you to bake cookies while you're selling your house so that the people come through feeling comfy and happy and soothed and warm and wanting to buy the property. You're looking to create a harmonious sort of refuge from the outside world, no matter the size or style of your kitchen. In witchcraft and magic making, as well as in life, I believe you start where you are. If you're at all drawn to kitchen witchery, you don't need a plethora of Pinterest-worthy items to begin. You can start with a simple vision of full bellies, an attitude of protection and comfort, and an idea of making things just generally inviting. Now, it wasn't so long ago that we didn't freeze or cool our food, and that the magic of the food was more in our face and more ready to work its magic on us, rather than being sanitized and packaged away or chilled beyond escape. Soups bubbled and simmered in open pots. Fruits and vegetables were scrubbed and sitting ready ripe, freshly collected from the outside fields and forests. Honey, vinegar, salts, oils, whatever, was clearly labeled and ready at hand to give your own special sauce touch to a dish. There were no microwaves in sight. Now you can begin setting the scene by choosing good quality pots and pans. I'm getting myself a salt pig or a salt cellar because salt is my weapon of choice for everything, and also it just sounds like the cutest thing. Sadly, I don't think it's in the shape of a pig. The word pig actually comes from an old Scottish dialect and means earthenware jar or pot. Now, if you are thinking that a cauldron would be the perfect addition to your kitchen, just know that the cauldron doesn't have to be big and black and cast iron, though if you do have one, why not, I say. But it can also be a simple saucepan, a slow cooker, whatever vessel is deep enough to really infuse some ingredients and create change. Now, witchy TikTokers, I've noticed, really love using simmer pots, which can smell really delicious throughout the house, but they can also be used in the place of an oil diffuser or a fragrant candle. They don't have to be particularly complex. You want the ingredients to work hard for their place. You can have combos such as lemon slices, rosemary sprigs, vanilla extract and cinnamon, or cloves, oranges, cinnamon, and pine needles, depending on your preference or intention. And you can also use simmer pots in your visualizing spell work because they're great at evoking particular memories or creating the proper atmosphere that you want. They also look very aesthetically pleasing, and they just generally work to make me hungry and thirsty. Other ordinary kitchen tools have their magical uses. The mortar and pestle, you might be used to just creating pesto when you're not using your blender. But if you look a bit closer, you'll see that the mortar is the receiving feminine vessel, and the pestle, actively working at grinding the salts or herbs or spices, is the providing masculine. And together they are creating transformation. They're popular in the magic community for doing things such as turning dried herbs into incense powder, breaking up large pieces of crystal to fit into spell jars, grinding eggshells for protection, basically transforming anything large to small and anything solid to powder or paste. Now, knives are associated with cutting away negativity, protection, and also, similar to the mortar and pestle, transformation, because they're cutting up things into little pieces. They can symbolize the element of air due to their sharpness and their ability to divide, and they can be used to carve symbols or words into candles, prepare ingredients, or in cord-cutting rituals to release negative energies or people from your life. And finally, the wooden spoon symbolizes nurturing, stirring up energies, and bringing things together. It also represents the element of earth due to its natural wood material, and it can be used magically for stirring ingredients in potions or spells, blessing food or beverages, or you can even use it as a wand substitute for directing energy in a particular way. Kitchen witchery is largely practiced in the deliberate choices made in choosing your ingredients and flavors. Intention, ritual, incantation can all layer itself in the kitchen witch's craft. The magical tea latte that I drink when I'm dropping off the kids in the morning and I speak about in episode 2 is actually a piece of easy and effective kitchen witchery. Now, I wanted to share with you a couple of kitchen witchery basics that I've begun to build out in my practice, and you can take as you please and implement them in your own practice as you see fit. Primary rule with kitchen magic: always work with clear and focused intentions. No matter how delicious the food is, how clean the kitchen is, how many ropes of garlic are dangling by the window, it will not get you your desired outcome unless you apply focus. And also, know what you're focusing on. So before beginning any magical work, take the time to clearly define your intentions and goals with making the meal. This helps direct your energy, and it also ensures that your magic aligns with your desired outcome, whether it's for healing, prosperity, protection, or love. The point here is to focus on being mindful and present in the moment while working with the ingredients, and that makes all the magical difference. Now, when stirring ingredients in a pot or a cauldron or in a mug, you can follow a consistent direction to align with specific energies. So stirring something clockwise or diocel is used for invoking, attracting, and building energies. And this is the common direction for spells related to growth, abundance, and attraction. And if you're stirring something counterclockwise or widdershins, this is used for banishing, releasing, and diminishing energies. And it's common for spells related to banishment, breaking habits, and letting go. And this is the really easy way to start witchery in the kitchen. I basically make a point at the moment to stir everything in a clockwise direction so I can have that emphasis on prosperity, abundance, and positivity. And once I start figuring what I want to banish, I'll start moving things in Widdershins' direction. If it all feels a bit overwhelming, but you love the idea of kitchen witchery, you can also edge in by getting really fanatical about a favored ingredient that already pops into your life quite often. I love salt. I think I've said it enough times already. There is another ingredient, though, that I've been really focusing on learning about, and that's honey. I've always been fascinated by the lives of bees, and I've just been smashing the honey in every liquid that I'm drinking, basically. And I was thinking about it, and I was like, from the beginning, I might not know the exact magical properties or how I can use it in spells, but at the very least, my day feels sweeter because I'm drinking it. It's very luxe, and it's just like a little golden blessing. I mean, just think about it. It's magic because it exists. It's honey that is a flower paste made by animals. That's wild. Now, the tools that I listed before, the wooden spoon, the cauldron, the mortar and pestle, the knife, kitchen witches tend to consecrate them, ready for work in their kitchen magic practice. Consecrating kitchen tools involves cleaning them physically and energetically through methods like smudging or saltwater baths or moon baths or sun baths. The methods used can be things like purification with simple soap and water, basically passing the tools through smoke with a smudge stick. You could put them in a bowl of water mixed with sea salt or Himalayan salt, and you can visualize the salt purifying and removing any of that negativity. You can also bathe them in a sun or moon bath. You're placing the tools in direct sunlight or moonlight of your choosing, and you're allowing the natural energies of the sun or moon to cleanse and recharge. Consecrating also means setting up a sacred space in the kitchen or the altar where the witch will perform their consecration ritual. So they might light some candles, they might burn some incense, and they might play some calming music to create that really peaceful atmosphere. And this is where they might call upon divine energies, deities, elemental forces, or spirits that resonate with their particular practice. So they would state their intentions clearly, and they'd focus on imbuing the tools with the positive energy now that all the negative energy has been released. And if they're really going for it with this cleansing, purifying ritual experience, they might charge the tools with intent by holding them in their hands and visualizing it glowing with radiant energy. And they also might thank the tools. So they might thank the divine energies or the elements or the spirits that were invoked for their guidance, for their protection and their assistance. And just simply acknowledging the sacredness of the tools and the connections that have been created. Consecration of the kitchen tools also means storing them mindfully. So you might have a special dedicated space for your kitchen tools that have been consecrated and that you will use in magical rituals, like a special drawer or a shelf or even a kitchen altar. If you keep them separate from the non-magical practical tools of the kitchen, the idea here is that they will maintain their sacredness and their energetic alignment. And if you're worried about consecrating the tools in the wrong way or not powerfully enough or not ridding them of negative energy, don't be. You can adjust the ritual to suit your beliefs, your traditions, and your intuition, and this will make it a personalized and meaningful consecration experience for your kitchen witchery. Well, I've definitely banged on about pots and pans for long enough. Rest assured, though, that if you're into kitchen witchery, this is a podcast where it won't be the last time I'm talking about it. I love it, and I can't wait to share all my adventures in cooking with you. If you would like to support what I do here, the best thing you can do to support your girl is by rating me 5 stars on the podcast platform you're listening to right now. You have no idea what such a seemingly small thing on your end can do for me and getting this podcast out to more ears. And if you want double toil and trouble, I have a Patreon link in the show notes and in my YouTube banner where you can access VIMP, Very Important Magical Person episodes, which is one exclusive episode for each episode that I release publicly. And this is along with card pulls, spells, rituals, magical thoughts, and recommendations from me. Now, where else am I? You can also catch me at the Something Wicked This Way Comes official YouTube channel and also the sister channel Temple. Thank you for flying with me today, and remember, the world is indeed magic, and one of the most magical things in this world is you. See you next time.